All right. Great. Thank you all for joining us today. And I want to give a big thank you to Brennan Marcano, who will be speaking with us this hour. So Brennan is Chief Executive Officer at the National GEM Consortium. So this interview is an element of IRI's diversity, equity, and inclusion community, and the DEI provides resources and networking opportunities for members as you promote DE&I in your innovation and R&D practices. So as this community continues to grow, we have facilitated roundtable discussions on key topics, and these are generally on the second Friday of the month. This month we're kind of skewy because we have the Digital Futures Conference last week, so we'll be meeting tomorrow. We also do updates with insights and additional resources and thought leader interviews like we're doing today. These almost always take place on the second Thursday of the month at noon Eastern. And next month, we will be honoring Veterans Day with a panel of veterans who are also working in industry now. And if you don't already receive updates for the DE&I community, I will be sending them to you shortly. Just a few housekeeping items to get through before we begin the conversation. So first, this session is being recorded and you will get a link to the recording. We will just be distributing the recording as a podcast, so there won't be any visuals here today. Second, please hold all questions until the end. And once we open the floor to questions, you can either type your question into the chat and I'll read it out for you, or you can come on video and ask it, face to face. All right, all the boring stuff out of the way. So Brennan, thanks so much for joining us from Chicago today. One of my favorite
Thank you for
cities.
Having me.
Great. So can you tell us a bit about your background?
Sure. I like to consider myself a storyteller. When folks ask me what's my special skill, I say I'm a storyteller that has gone through multiple iterations of stories. Really, my background is started off on Wall Street, where I still to this point have spent the majority of my career. I'm just sort of timing now that I've moved into the nonprofit sector when the numbers start going in the favor of nonprofits. So I think Wall Street's still winning right now. spent a lot of time in the fintech space, and then transitioned over into the public sector, starting off as executive director of a nonprofit called Workforce Opportunity Services, which was sort of an offshoot from some research work done by one of my old professors at Columbia University, who was the chairman of that as well. And so getting to work with your old mentor is always a good thing, especially if through that process you're doing some social good as well. And that after spending a couple of years there, then went on to another nonprofit called Council of Urban Professionals, which dealt with diversity at the executive levels in finance and media and entertainment, but where there's deal flow, which happens at the finance and media and entertainment levels, you always get lawyers. And so we also had the third vertical for lawyers as well. And then finally branched off from there to be at my current nonprofit, which is the National GEM Consortium. So a couple of different types of stories, but I think the narrative overall is fairly consistent.
All right. So you got to tell us what the GEM Consortium is. I only heard about it for the first time probably less than a year ago, and it is not rocks. I kept thinking, wow, these people are really into gemstones. I was very impressed. So please save other people my ignorance and tell them about the GEM Consortium and who the participants are.
Absolutely. And so I also get emails as well about rocks. So I think it's common. And there are also other entities that, GEM is a popular word. So, but the National GEM Consortium is a 46-year-old nonprofit who's, I like to start off by talking about the vision. Our vision is scientific impact. At the end of the day, that's what we're fundamentally focused on. When I say we, though, GEM is made up of a consortium of about 135 of the top universities in the country. So all the Ivy Leagues, top 50 engineering schools, HBCUs, they've all been members of GEM now for decades. On the flip side, about 75 major corporate, I think it's 76 now, major corporations. I like to say the brand names that folks know and love. And so on the Valley side, you'll see some of the usual cast of characters, the Intels, the Apples, the Amazons, Qualcomm, again, the usual cast of characters, but it's STEM. And so naturally, it will traverse multiple industries. So equally, you'll see on the pharmaceutical side, you'll see the Mercks and the Johnson & Johnsons. On the manufacturing side, you'll see Ford and 3M. The majority of the Department of Energy National Labs are part of GEM right now. And we have a couple of financial services as well. So again, a nice distribution between industries, which again makes sense because STEM covers all industries at this point in time. And so that makeup of 76 corporations and 130-something universities, so a little over 200 institutions in total, make up the GEM Consortium. And what GEM does with that consortium is companies and universities come together to financially support underrepresented minorities in STEM fields for them to pursue their master's and PhDs.
Okay. So tell us some of the stories about the alums. You know, how do you get them in? You know, how are they? What are their let's do some success stories. We won't ask about the ones.
Well, you know, the great thing is when you're doing a fellowship, which is based off of a meritocracy, you're really working with individuals that just needed that support to be able to actualize their fullest potential. And so most of these folks, if not all of them, are trajecting towards stardom, so as to say. They're on very, very positive trajectories. The impact of GEM, I always like to encapsulate it in two ways. One, I'm going to do a little personal touting for the organization, which is a couple months ago, we received the Presidential Award from the White House, which is the highest honor you can get in the country, specifically in the lane that GEM is in. So we're very excited about that. And so I think as we talk about success stories, there's this idea of in aggregate, the administration is at least acknowledging the impact that GEM has had over the decades, which is a representation of the alum success stories. But as we get into sort of a little bit more minutiae of detail, there are a lot of well-known individuals that have traversed through the GEM program. So right now, over half of the minority female deans of engineering schools in the country right now are GEM alums, and a fair amount of their male counterparts as well, many of whom have been already inducted into the National Academy of Engineering, which is, again, sort of the highest honor you can get in that specific lane. I always share with folks that coupled with the folks in academia, you have individuals such as Ursula Burns, former chair and CEO of Xerox, who's a GEM alum, or Reggie Van Lee, who is the CTO of the Carlyle Group, and a well-known African-American philanthropist, GEM alum. And Sylvia Acevedo, who used to run Girl Scouts USA and was featured in Forbes and now is on the board of Qualcomm, also another GEM alum. We currently have GEM alums on Forbes 30 Under 30 list. Some well-known leaders of nonprofits as well. And again, some very successful folks on the industry side. And some well-established entrepreneurs as well. And so, again, I always tell folks when we talk about GEM is the beauty of the GEM model is because there is this history of success stories, well-known individuals that sort of carry the mantle for GEM. And now with, you know, some of the accolades that we're receiving, it allows folks who engage with GEM to not worry about the quality part of the equation. I think we've got enough data points to ensure that the quality part is there. And it allows us to really start to focus on fit, because you can have really smart people who maybe not be the right fit for your organizations. And so we spend a lot of time making sure that we do a little bit of matchmaking between smart people and great organizations to ensure that when you hit sort of that perfect symmetry, perfect match, that you're really creating an environment that can stimulate innovation, creativity, and ultimately scientific impact.
Awesome. So I want to talk, you know, we've got the chat is blowing up with people saying, I'm a GEM alum and we work with GEM, and lots of accolades there. So Can you talk a bit more about how it works with companies in particular, you know, how they get matched with GEM fellows and what happens next? And then I want to come back to talking more about the students too.
Absolutely. And so the beauty of being around for, I'll do sort of supply demand side of it. The beauty of being around for 46 years now is that GEM has tentacles throughout the country. And so at every institution, those 200 plus institutions, we have what's called a GEM rep situated at these institutions. They are employees of the institutions, but they represent the single point of contact for us and the internal champion within these organizations. So naturally, having 130 something of the top universities and having a champion at each of these universities, they're also talking to the undergrad populations and seniors, et cetera, and steering them in the direction to say, look, this is one of the premier organizations in STEM. You probably want to be a part of this. And so that creates the groundswell for students to apply for the GEM Fellowship. The other thing is that, again, being around for four decades, there's word of mouth. There are a lot of alums that are in corporations or nonprofits, et cetera. And so folks talk to young and upcoming diverse stars and tell them, you know, this is an organization that you probably want to be a part of. And so that creates sort of the groundswell from a talent perspective. On the client side, it's a little bit of word of mouth as well. The beauty of corporate America is very competitive. And when folks realize that organizations are attracting all of these stars, they, you know, it's I always joke and say it's like that when Harry met Sally moment. You know, we have other managers saying, you know, I'd like to have what they're having. And so we've seen a lot of organizations certainly start migrating towards GEM. Of course, obviously the presidential award, et cetera, doesn't hurt. It raises the awareness and visibility of the organization, but we've really seen a groundswell of awareness of corporations, of competitive spirit between corporations, as well as support from government agencies as well. So I talked about Department of Energy National Labs, who are huge supporters of GEM. NSF, National Science Foundation, has provided us with grants in the past. And we also work with entities such as NASA. So I think as you start getting that high caliber of clientele and major corporations that are endorsing GEM and supporting GEM, the others follow suit. Oftentimes we'll go to large conferences, there's many of them throughout the country, and corporations that are part of the GEM consortium will typically put up a GEM tent on their booths. And it's an amazing thing to see both universities and corporations when you walk through these career fairs and graduate fairs to see all these tents everywhere. It tends to put pressure on the organizations that don't have tents. and equally for students as well, they walk around and see these tents. So I think a lot of this is the awareness of the impact that GEM has had, certainly over the decades, and the infrastructure that's currently in place that's allowing us to continue to grow both on the student and on the employer side.
Okay, so once you've identified a high potential student, and so what do they get? And what does the company get? And what does the university get? What does everyone
absolutely
get out of this?
Absolutely. I like win-win-win scenarios because then you have a good deal. So companies will engage with GEM for a couple of value propositions. First is, again, quality. At the end of the day, everyone is looking for best and brightest talent. And so as I shared before with the accolades and the historical perspective, at this point in time, no one really questions the quality part of the equation. And so the majority, you know, all of our companies really engage with us because they want the best and brightest talent. The second value proposition that resonates a lot with our corporations is ease of use. Because the interest in getting best and bright talent and the thirst for it, so as to say, has always been there. No one's sitting around going, oh, I'm not interested in getting smart people. The challenge often is, how do you find them? And so what GEM does is we make that easy. We like to call ourselves the easy button for finding the best and brightest talent. You don't have to jump on planes, trains, and automobiles to find the talent. You do like what we're doing today, which is you flip open your laptop and the talent is readily available through our online portal. And so for all of our corporations, that ease aspect of it as well is very compelling. And you can probably extrapolate that back and have some cost considerations associated with not traveling as much. And of course, the last one is cost as well. The cost of supporting a GEM fellow is $22,500 for their entire academics, not per semester, not per year, in total, $22,500. And so I always
just postgraduate, right?
Yeah, if their entire master's or their entire PhD, $22,500. And so I always joke with folks and tell them $22,500 won't even cover orientation at Stanford. And so for our corporations, it represents a price arbitrage opportunity as compared to any pre-existing programs they may have with local universities. And so the pitch usually becomes, if I can give you access to the best and brightest talents in the country, help you with your diversity numbers, make it easy for you, and save you a couple of bucks, would you be interested? And I think we're yet to find an organization or corporation that's not interested in that all those value points. From a university perspective, because there are multiple players involved in this equation, the value proposition is similar. One, they understand that having a diverse student population lends towards creativity and innovation and advances research as well. But there's also a longer term view as well to, you know, diverse students are pipelines for diverse faculty. And so they equally have a viewpoint in investing in this type of infrastructure produces longer term goals that align well with their own diversity initiatives. When I started teaching, I teach at as an adjunct professor at NYU over the summertime. I remember years ago when I started teaching, my students coming to me saying, you're the first African-American professor I've had at school. And so I know that it's something that is very, very looked at now at faculty perspective. And schools are doing a lot of things to make sure that they're addressing this and building that pipeline to have much more diverse faculty. And of course, the cool thing for the students, which is the best value proposition is they go to school for free. And so often, you know, we do this workshop that we do around the country called Grad Labs, which stands for Getting Ready for Advanced Degree Lab Workshops. And when we get a chance to chat with those seniors from undergraduate programs, they're usually about two primary hurdles we see. One is they assume that if I get a PhD, it's just to teach. And we expose them to the fact that, well, actually with a PhD, you're now a subject matter expert. The world is yours. You can do anything. And we also explain to them some of the financial considerations, salary-wise, difference between having an undergraduate and a master's and a PhD. The second part is for many of them, financially, the undergrad journey has been telling. And so we walk into the room and say, the journey's just started. And they go, well, I have no idea how I'll financially be able to afford this. So when we walk in and say, and by the way, if you want to achieve your fullest potential, it's free. It's on us. It takes away those barriers. And now they can focus on research. Now they can focus on being the best that they can be. And so that plays a lot into the whole process. So we always tell the applicants three things to keep in mind as to why you want to be a part of GEM. And we highlight free school. Let's not miss that. That's the primary one. But the second one is being a part of a premier, one of the most premier STEM organizations in the country that's been around for 40 something years. And so that ties into the third part, which is now you have this robust network support system in place as you're moving up in your career. You know, there's a lack of diversity in STEM, as we all know. Equally, one of the phenomena is folks generally tend to migrate to individuals that look like themselves when seeking mentors. And so for underrepresented minorities in STEM fields, they face that challenge. The beauty of being with GEM is when you become a GEM fellow, you inherit 40-something years of a support system in place. And so you now inherit middle managers, alums who are middle managers, who can organically become a mentor for you or may share a field of subject and can provide technical assistance to you. There are senior execs within the community that can become sponsors for you, and so or just friends. And so you really now become indoctrinated into a 40-something year community. And that helps a lot, especially with young professionals as they traject through their different careers.
All right. So one quick question that came in on the chat. Is GEM an acronym? It didn't even occur to me that it was might be an acronym.
So it's a great question. And so the full name of GEM is the National GEM Consortium, which is actually not the legal name. The legal name is even longer. But in the old days, GEM stood for Graduate Engineering for Minorities. About 20 years ago, we expanded beyond engineering and now encompass all of STEM. And so now the E stands for education. So now it's Graduate Education for Minorities.
Ah, excellent. Okay, that does help. Thank you. So you get, so, you know, you've got these high potential students. They like, oh, okay, you could pay for my master's or my PhD. Sounds amazing. So what do they do with the companies while they're getting their postgraduate degrees?
Absolutely. And so again, we focus on fit. And so when a company invests in a student, they're obviously very interested in them showing back up in their doors at the end of school as full-time employees. And so when they make that investment, the key to this is now to see what we can do to help with the fit. And a huge part of that fit is exposure. And so when you support a GEM fellow, the company also gets offers them up internships. So for master's students who are fellows, they get two internships, one the summer before they go into their program, the second after the first year. That's designed to make sure that the relationship between the sponsoring company and the sponsee student can be as strong as possible, because both parties ultimately want to make a decision on if they want this to be a long-term relationship. And so we try to create as much exposure as possible between both entities so that we sort of help with the fit process. If you're a PhD student, you will do your internship before you go into your PhD program, because as we all know, once you're in your PhD program, it's a lot harder to pry you away from your faculty advisor. However, unless, and we do try to be intentional about this, unless it's collaborative research, in which case now you're actively pursuing your academics while being on site at your sponsoring employer.
Okay, so how do you get the right fit? So what comes first, you know, the university, the company, you know, how does that work?
Sure. So very first thing starts with the student. So when students fill out the application form, they have the ability to identify their top three employers of choice from our list, as well as identify the universities they're interested in attending. After the judging process, because again, part of ensuring quality is we invite subject matter experts from industry and academia to opine on all of the GEM applications that come in. And we get about 2,000 plus applications a year. And so after judging, that whittles down to about a little under 1,000 folks that are eligible to receive a GEM fellowship. After that process takes place and we sort of have the final list, what we do is we share the list of students that have said, this institution is my number one choice. In the first week of selection, our selection process, we share everyone that has said that this institution is my number one choice with them. And then in the second week, we share with everyone, all the students that said that they were their number two choice. And, you know, we sort of, you know, for the first 3 weeks, it's student selection, so as to say, because we believe a significant part of fit would be knowing who wants to work there. And so we try to align with students' wishes so that the employers know that there's already a general interest up front. After that, what we do is called profile matching. And so the employers indicate the type of individual, skill set wise, that they're looking for. And there's, you know, they input that into our online tool, and it's multiple levels of minutiae of detail that they can put into as much as they wish. We then take that information and we match that up to the profiles of the students that are applying to be GEM fellows. In that process, obviously, we're not going to bat 1,000, nor do we want to be sort of the central figures around fit. But it does give us a general guide as to who we should be showing our employers. So we go off of a process that we call the 3X process, meaning, and I'll give you an example. If an employer says, I want 10 computer scientists, we will then show them 30 computer scientists that match up to their profile, generally speaking. But then we encourage the employers to go out and talk to those applicants, because GEMs should not be the arbiters or fit for an employer. Only employers will know who would be a right fit for their organization. So what we do is we fill the tank, so as to say, with enough talent so that you should be percentage-wise able to find the folks that match up. And then we encourage you to go out and evaluate the talent any which way you typically evaluate talent, whether that's test them, interview, whatever is your usual process to evaluate talent, you go ahead and do it. And once you find someone that you like and they also like you, then the folks hit the check button that says, I will sponsor them. And then we're sort of off to the races. So what we try to do is create an infrastructure to allow both parties to, you know, it's almost like speed dating for tech talent. A little bit more complex than that, but you get the general idea. But it allows folks to really be able to hone in, because, again, we're looking for long-term relationships that really allow us to stimulate scientific impact.
And then where does the university come in?
So once a student is sponsored, that 20 grand, 22.5, is paid by the employer. The university picks up the rest of the tab. And so a student will on their own have to still get into these universities, because, again, it is a meritocracy. Once they get into the universities, and these are all GEM universities, GEM then reaches out to them, actually the online system will, to indicate that this student that you have accepted is also applying for the GEM fellowship. Will you participate in that? So the schools have the ability to then say, we'll pick up the rest of the tab for the student so that they can be a full GEM fellow.
Okay. So about how many students a year are you able to fund then?
Great question. So again, like I said, every year we get over 2,000 applications. Post-judging, that number whittles down to about 1,000. Last year was our most, our fiscal year goes from July through June. So at the end of June, the wrap-up of our year was our most successful year. And we did 431 fellows being supported. And so again, if you do the math, you can see if it's a pool of 1,000 and we're supporting about 431, we're not even halfway there to supporting all of these individuals, which, you know, obviously for us as a nonprofit is our focus area, because we believe that everyone that's qualified to be supported should be supported. And why shouldn't they? If we look sort of at the current industry, we see that there is significant demand for talent, STEM talent. And so any organization, not just GEM, any organization that has a glut of STEM supply and a workforce that's actually interested in working at extremely high competency levels in STEM, there should be no reason why we can't support the next 500 plus students every year.
So staying with the students, how do you work to identify them? You know, are you working specifically with existing GEM institutions? You know, how does it work?
Sure. So absolutely. So starting point is existing GEM institutions, but anyone can apply for a GEM fellowship. And so we encourage any institution to tell their students about GEM fellowships. So I think the start of the conversation still happened within the existing consortium members. But when we do grad labs, for instance, the lab workshops that I was mentioning before, where we educate seniors at undergrad institutions on the importance of pursuing an advanced degree, we will host those grad labs at a GEM institution, but invite all of the students and universities in the region to attend. Because again, you know, there is the core business model of getting students supported, but there's also a holistic approach as a nonprofit of educating folks of the importance of actually pursuing an advanced degree. And so we try to make sure that that messaging goes as far and wide as possible. And so through that process, it permeates throughout many of the organizations and institutions in the country.
And so, kind of shifting gears slightly, you touched on this a little bit before, but, you know, I can definitely see how this impacts, you know, diversity and recruitment in companies. But How do you think it can impact inclusion and retention within those organizations? Because that's you know, the other key element of the puzzle, isn't it?
Absolutely. I always share with companies that you have to have a diverse ecosystem view of talent. If you only focus on the entry-level talent, that diverse entry-level talent will walk in through your doors and immediately look up your corporate ladder. And if they don't see anyone that looks like them, their clock starts ticking. And you probably have 2-3 years with them, if you're lucky, before they seek alternate pathways where they believe they can be more successful. And so the smarter organizations actively recruit diverse middle managers who organically become mentors for that entry-level talent. The smarter organizations are actively recruiting diverse senior execs who become sponsors for everyone. I always share with folks, the beauty of working with GEM is we have 40-something years worth of alums. And so you're able to, you know, if you're part of the GEM consortium and you're actively supporting that next generation of STEM talent, STEM stars, so as to say, we open up access to our alums so that folks can then start building out that diverse ecosystem, because it truly has to be an ecosystem if you want it to be sustainable.
Oh, I like that. That's interesting. And, you know, 46 years. Yeah.
We have a lot. Exactly.
So last question before we open the floor. So what are your plans to grow the program? You said you want to be able to fund all of the eligible applicants.
Sure. So I've been at the helm of GEM now for 6 years. And so 6 years ago, when I attended my first board meeting with the entire consortium, one of the things that I shared with them is, you know, they asked me to make my presentation as simple as possible because it's the first time folks are seeing me. And so I did a one PowerPoint slide presentation, and that PowerPoint slide only had an empty podium on it. And I said, what is it you want us to say at our 10-year anniversary, 10 years from now at our 50th anniversary, when we reflect on GEM's success? Do we want to just talk about it was another year? Or do we want to talk about that today we made a decision to make significant impact in STEM and that we're reporting out on that impact at our 50th anniversary? And I joined to do the latter and sort of challenged the entire consortium to take this journey with me, which they were absolutely, well, there were two parts to it. I said, because back then we were doing much lower percentages of support for students. We were supporting about 18% back then when I came on board of eligible students. And so we did a little bit of math and said, you know, in 10 years, we want to get to a point where we're not leaving any scientists and technologists behind, and based that off of current traffic patterns, because, you know, over time, the patterns will change. So to use a baseline, we use the current traffic patterns. And in order for us to get to that point after 10 years, we would have had to grow 20% year on year. And so that was the challenge we put down, saying that we would grow 20% year on year. And I think for a lot of folks, new CEO coming on board, putting, you know, these huge aspirations, they felt, well, you know, God bless him. I wish him the best of luck. The interesting thing about that, though, is the consortium actually responded to that challenge. And collectively, in our first year, we grew 40% and have continued to have that significant type of growth. I think 1 year we did below 20%. And that was this thing called COVID. And so for any nonprofit to be able to say that we grew 11% in the midst of COVID still was a success story. We've actually grown so much right now that we've 4x'd in size in the past 5 years. And so we're actually blowing some of those aggressive goals out of the water. But our overall goal is always to be the premier organization for STEM talent. And we broke that out into sort of three phases. The first phase was being, you know, we call it aggregator mode, which just means we need to get to our fighting size. Can't have an organization around this long with all these success stories and not be larger. And so we then started to really fine tune the messaging around GEM so that folks understood exactly what GEM has always been doing. And we made it in digestible chunks, and that really got the entire industry going. And so we've been slowly, like I said, the 4x over 5 years, et cetera. It's been a pursuit to grow to our fighting size. The reason for that is once we get large enough, and I believe now that we have 200 plus institutions, we're at that point. We're now in what we call our influencer mode, which is if you're large enough and you have significant entities as part of you, the NASAs, the NSFs, the large tech companies, et cetera, you're now able to effectuate change within the industry. And so we're now starting to play into that space where we offer advisory services to our partners to help them share best practices. We start working on major initiatives. So we're partnering with the White House on their Space STEM initiative. So we're starting to get involved in some more higher visibility, higher impact initiatives so that we can influence the industry. And we believe that if we play in that space long enough, that eventually we'll look up and realize that we're best in class, which is our ultimate goal, to be that premier organization that's leading the way. And one of the things we always tell folks is, why not? If we sit here and talk about we have the best and brightest talent, the best institutions, et cetera, everything is the best, the best, the best, why would we possibly set mediocre goals for ourselves? It doesn't align. And so, again, our aspirations are to be that premier organization, and currently we're in that influencer mode.
How exciting. That's great. All right. So we're going to open the floor to questions now. If anyone wants to jump in, and you know, they can ask it face to face or they can drop it in the chat and I'm happy to read it out for you. As I said before, we've had the chats going with lots of alums and organizations that have worked with you. So Hess is one, and Lam Research as well, both of them, and Ford.
Love them. Great partners. Appreciate them all. I see I've actually just popped open the meeting chat, and I see Lam Research as well, a significant partner. And actually, the last chairman of GEM is Tim Archer, the CEO of Lam Research, who is an amazing chair. And Lam is a very, very strong and strategic partner.
Awesome. Any questions or comments for Brennan?
Looking through the comments as well, just wanted to give Hess a shout out and Auburn University as well. We appreciate all of you.
Good morning. I had one question for you. My name is Kimberly. I'm with Mosaic. I'm not familiar with GEM, I guess, prior to this session. I was just scrolling through your website a little bit here as you were chatting. And I apologize if this has been answered already. Is this focused on the United States or do you have a presence in Canada as well?
It's focused on the US.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Yep.
Any other questions? To that end, since Dana Bromwich here with Crown, are you aware of anything similar that's global or in Europe in particular?
I'm not. I think you'll find a lot more similarities in organizations at the undergrad level. I think there's a lot of emphasis on undergrad, diverse talent, not just in the US, but you'll find other global organizations that focus on that as well. I don't think there are many organizations that focus at that high level of masters and PhDs, and not even in the US. You know, the nature of GEM being also, you know, primarily privately funded, et cetera, makes it a very, very unique proposition.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? I think I have wowed the crowd, Lee.
This isn't a question, but I'll just, you know, offer my advice. Lam's been sponsoring fellowships through GEM for, gosh, 3 or 4 years now, Brennan. I don't remember. But the internship is a huge advantage to this program. It's, you know, fantastic that the students get to know Lam, we get to know the students, and they really get an understanding kind of at the start of their graduate education of what real life engineering is like. What are the jobs like? And I think that helps give them vision on what they want to do with their career. And it's an opportunity for us to start forming that relationship.
Absolutely. It's a great point.
Oh, and thanks for jumping in with a question. My Teams went very strange there. I froze. I'm sorry.
Teams was not being a team player.
It was not. It was not. All right. Well, Brennan, thank you so much for sharing with us today. We really appreciate it. And thanks to all the GEM alums and companies that joined and were able to do shout outs. And again, thanks to everyone. And thanks for the great questions. We'll see you on November 10th, where we will be celebrating Veterans Day. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you all for having me. Take care, everybody.
Thanks everyone. Thanks, Lee. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.